This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. The potential of wind energy is just beginning to be realized in the U.S. Some states have been embracing this technology to create electricity. Michigan's been a little slower to put up as many wind turbines. Our guests to talk about wind and Michigan are Mark Cleavy, he's co-chair at the Great Lakes Wind Collaborative, and Victoria Pebbles, program director with the Great Lakes Commission. Mark, let's get started with an overall description of wind energy in Michigan. How much of our electricity is produced by wind today?
We have roughly 1,000 megawatts of wind in place, and the percentage of wind in total, we have a 10% renewable energy portfolio standard. The vast majority of that standard is being met by wind. And, you know, although that we were, I guess, a little bit late in the game, we came into the wind game in a really good time, because the price of wind dropped dramatically during the period of time that Michigan was involved in this, and it continues to drop. And that's due primarily to large-scale technological improvements, in many cases the way that Michigan, it was very innovative in some of the ways that they did it. So we're actually in a very good position. In fact, wind came in so much cheaper than originally planned on some of the projects that utilities actually rebated some of their customers, consumers' energy, for example. So it was a good time. We're in a position where the wind that we have, we don't have to worry about it being so expensive that we're actually going to be losing money going forward because of the way energy prices are. So we're in really good shape. Also, I think the benefit that it encouraged wind manufacturers to diversify from the auto industry, the pleasure boat industry, and other industries, tool and die industries, et cetera, to diversify into this industry. And now their activities in Michigan have allowed them to open up and become worldwide players in this growing and highly competitive market that's very much based on technological breakthroughs in composites, materials, things like that. So it's in Michigan's sweet spot.
Right. I want to get into both of those topics a little further. I want to compare, though, Michigan's production with states like Indiana or Minnesota.
Some of those states have larger renewable energy portfolio standards, so they've been at the game longer. So they simply have more wind power in place than we do.
There's been some talk about wind turbines off the western shore out in Lake Michigan. What kind of potential, Victoria, would offshore wind turbines offer?
Offshore wind turbines offer the potential to be closer to where the people are, which are called load centers. So if you look at wind resource maps across the Great Lakes region on land and offshore, a lot of the really high-quality wind is located in the plains areas, lower-lying areas, which are often far away from where the people are and the electrical demand is. With the exception of offshore, you have very high wind resources over the lakes, which is close to a lot of the coastal communities, large places like Cleveland, Chicago, and so forth.
Recently in Michigan, some legislators introduced a bill that not only would block wind turbines in Lake Michigan, but it would even block research to see if it's feasible. We saw the same sort of controversy near Cape Cod in Massachusetts. That project finally is going ahead. What's likely to happen in Michigan?
I think that it's unfortunate. I don't think we should cut off any opportunities to do research and look at how the Great Lakes region, the state of Michigan, or even the country at large can provide clean and secure energy resources. Research is the primary way that we discover new energy sources, and it's been the way of our country in the past and going down the future. So I think it's unfortunate to cut off those opportunities. If the research shows that it's not a viable opportunity, that's one thing, but to cut off before we've even done the research is unfortunate.
I'm wondering if we've seen a lot of wind turbines in any of the Great Lakes water. I understand Cleveland is planning to put out a turbine or maybe some turbines in Lake Erie. How important would a pilot project like that be for the rest of the Great Lakes region?
It would be essential. That is the opportunity for us to actually see what the impacts are, both environmentally, economically, even as well as socially. How will the local communities that are linking the wind turbines to the nearby transmission, for example, how would they benefit? What would their impacts be? What would the impacts be over the larger region as well as locally? It's essential to monitor those areas to see what impacts might be on fish habitat and other aquatic resources, as well as what the generating capacity is. We're estimating right now what it might be, but we won't know until we actually put a pilot project in place.
Now, it's not just the offshore turbines that are controversial. Some residents in Riga Township in Lenawee County have been fighting a proposed wind farm there. There's been a controversy at other sites as well, concerns about the noise of the turbines, the problems they cause for migratory birds. How significant, Mark, are these concerns, and how significant is the opposition?
Well, Michigan, as you know, is a home rule state, so local zoning and permitting and, of course, taxing of these things is the purview of the local governments. So I would say that any community has the right to determine what kinds of development happens in that community. A number of communities in Michigan, Gratiot County and others, have chosen to put wind in, and some other communities have chosen to not do it. I know that some of those same communities that were less than favorable on some of the ideas of wind are openly embracing the idea of doing community solar and large solar farms and things like that, and then adopting solar ordinances to allow individuals to put solar on their houses because they think that is less obtrusive. So I think it's a question of the local community, what they want, and what their future is. And I think they're expressing themselves democratically, and they're saying that they don't want this development in their community. Others are saying that they do, and the reasons why someone would want the development or not, I think, are pretty straightforward. Some of it is, is just preference over what they see and hear.
You mentioned Gratiot County. It's the largest wind farm in Michigan right now. It's been in operation for a year this month. How are residents there feeling about it about now?
The feedback that we get is they're happy about it, and there's a number of benefits. We did a best practices review of best practices across the Great Lakes, and Gratiot County was listed as a best practice for wind development for a number of reasons. One is farmland preservation. It was the best option for that because the community, everyone in the community received a financial benefit from the wind farm. They were actually able to increase the footprint for where the wind would be developed. So typically, if you develop a wind, you go into a geographic area, and it's a limited geographic area. So the idea is to pack as many wind turbines in the area as possible. If you're dealing with a larger footprint, you have the freedom and the luxury of spreading them out. And if you have that luxury, you have the freedom to put them on property lines instead of in the middle of fields. So you minimize the farming, et cetera. So I think on balance, we've heard primarily positive things from it, and they're talking about expanding them now.
We're talking with Mark Cleavy. He's a co-chair at the Great Lakes Wind Collaborative and Victoria Pebbles, program director with Great Lakes Commission. Victoria, last year I visited a new manufacturing plant in Monroe, Michigan, where they're making the towers for wind turbines. We've also seen several small manufacturers making components of wind turbines in Michigan, as Mark had mentioned earlier. What's the potential for increased production and jobs because of wind turbine manufacturing?
There's great potential. As you know, the Midwest and the Great Lakes region is the heartland of manufacturing for the United States. We have tremendous capacity. A lot of that capacity has not been used in most recent years because of the slowing down of the economy, and people are looking for jobs. That's no new news to anyone. And those manufacturing jobs, some of them can be filled by the wind energy industry. We at the Great Lakes Wind Collaborative recently completed a study looking at just the offshore piece, and we would love to look at the onshore piece as well, the benefits that accrue not only from an individual state, but having multiple states in a region produce different parts for a wind turbine. There are 8,000 component parts, so some of those might be produced in Ohio, and some might be in Michigan and Indiana, and there are a great capacity to leverage the manufacturing capability of the region to support a robust wind energy.
I know that some of these wind turbines are being actually imported from, is it Sweden? I think the bulk of them are being imported from. I'm just wondering, does the state right now have the incentives in place, or all of the states in the Great Lakes region have the incentives in place to attract these manufacturers and the additional wind capacity?
The states have a patchwork of different incentives and even some disincentives for attracting the manufacturing. That's more of a detailed discussion, but there are a variety of incentives. I can touch on them very quickly. And they are not just for the manufacturing, but also for incentives for the market in general. Of course, you're familiar with the Renewable Portfolio Standard, which was a very hot topic in Michigan this last fall.
Right.
And the associated REC market, or Renewable Energy Credit Market, that goes along with Renewable Portfolio Standards, that's just one policy. But there are other policies that can be initiated at the state level that can provide incentives for manufacturing and the industry at large, such as low-interest financing, tax incentives such as accelerated depreciation there, that happens at the federal level. It can also be complemented at the state level. Transmission upgrades. A few years back, Michigan established wind energy resource zones where it was targeted high wind energy resource areas with high transmission capacity. So making sure the transmission is in place to receive and distribute that energy. Clear siting policies that deal with issues like visual impacts and wildlife, potential wildlife impacts. When those issues are thought through and the policies are clear, that helps as well. And then taxing policies at the state level that are supported locally can also help.
So there's a lot of policy making that needs to be done in Michigan before we're really where we should be in this industry. Let's talk about the goal here, more renewable energy, less pollution, less greenhouse gas emissions. At this point, the renewable standards in Michigan are fairly modest compared to more progressive states. I'm wondering, are we on target to meet the existing 10% by 2015 mandate? Mark?
We are absolutely on target to meet that mandate, and we'll probably in some cases even exceed that mandate. And I think we're also in a very good shape for determining what the next phase will be. So several things are changing, I think, globally in terms of how renewable energy is looked at and how it's incentivized or disincentivized within various states and various communities. But the technology breakthroughs are allowing for the price to drop on wind energy a lot. And there's a movement towards a distributed energy generation that has come about primarily because of technological changes.
Wind is about 95% of all renewable energy generated in Michigan, according to the figures I have.
Yes.
Should we be investing in some of these other alternatives, such as more solar or more biofuels? What's the best balance?
So I think the best balance comes down to economics. And the other associated benefits are based on how one goes about doing this. So in Traverse City, for example, the municipal utility there is allowing individual ratepayers to buy into a community solar project. That the way of doing that could be extended to biomass, could be extended to wind projects, et cetera. So how it gets done really determines the kinds of benefits you're going to get. If a business builds a wind power plant directly, puts it on site, and bypasses the utility. So they're basically they're calling it distributed generation, but they basically build their own power and put it on site, large employers. They get benefits, but mostly they get 25 years of stable pricing. So that gives them a real competitive advantage in the global marketplace if they can take energy off the business risk side of their annual analysis of what they need to be worried about. So the difference between having an investor-owned utility invest in a wind farm and then selling that power to a private company versus that private company simply going directly to the wind industry and buying a wind farm directly. Global companies are looking at moving into this industry directly because it makes sense for them. They know what their energy price will be for the next 25 years if they finance an array, a solar array, or a wind farm.
Victoria, the constitutional amendment proposed last year called for 25% renewable energy by 2025. That proposal failed. What do you think state government should do, if anything, after we meet the current mandate in 2015?
Well, I think one of the issues with that was that it was tied to the Constitution. It was the method by which the increased portfolio standard was pursued. So it's really unclear whether the voters were voting against RPS, increasing renewables, or whether they were against the method. Many people I spoke with just didn't like tying it to the Constitution. A 25 by 25 is consistent with many of our neighboring states. Illinois has a 25 by 25. Ohio has 25, Minnesota has 25, New York has 29 by 25. So with the current RPS, it's on the relatively low scale compared to our neighboring states in the Great Lakes region. But as Mark said, I think the RPS is only one tool in the toolbox. The other policies that I mentioned previously are things that could be considered by the state and worked in cooperation with local governments depending on how the authorities lie, such as tax incentives, accelerated depreciation, transmission improvements, that's the purview of the state, clarifying how siting is done, that's mostly done at the local level, but some guidance can happen at the state level to help locals and enable them to do that efficiently.
Victoria, I want to talk about one thing that is brought up again and again and again by particularly people who are fans of fossil fuels, and that is we hear that renewable energy will have only limited potential because sometimes the wind doesn't blow, the sun doesn't shine. At the same time, we've seen some pretty innovative energy storage experiments going on, such as using turbines to pump water uphill when the wind's blowing, so when it's not, the water can be downhill and turn turbines on its own. So will renewable energy be able to overcome these skeptics, and if so, how and how soon?
It's true that wind doesn't blow everywhere all the time, but wind is always blowing somewhere at some time. And one of the key issues of bringing wind energy to market is the transmission. It's difficult to overestimate the importance of how transmission is to getting renewables onto the grid. And so improving the transmission system, and if you have a more robust transmission system, you can move that around. It's also how pricing is done, and that's a more technical issue. But marginal cost pricing for energy and how energy is bought and sold on the market on a very short time frame, looking at those policies can help make sure that renewables are maximized when they're on the grid and when they're available. Most people that are involved with the Great Lakes Wind Collaborative don't think that wind can be the silver bullet, that all of our energy needs can be met with wind. The idea is it's an important part of the region's portfolio, and how can we make sure that that is maximized to the extent it provides stable pricing, the cost of wind won't change, that it's clean, it doesn't use any water, and it doesn't have air emissions associated with it.
Victoria Pebbles is Program Director with the Great Lakes Commission, and Mark Cleavy with Great Lakes Wind Collaborative. Thank you both for explaining this to us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.